Kia ora and welcome to Airman's Podcast, episode 222. Today is Monday, June 21st, 2010. That means this is now officially winter. Although, of course, you knew that already, didn't you? Of course you did, because you listened to this podcast. Well, today I have an update to a story I've been updating. I have a couple more I want to tell you about. But first, and probably most, I want to tell you why this is such a busy week. This week ends with the Pride 48 Marathon, which is 48 hours of nonstop podcast live podcasting at pride48.com. And of course, I am this year's host. And I've been spending quite a lot of time working on the schedule and reworking on the schedule and reworking on the schedule and reworking on the schedule. I've said that it's like herding cats trying to get all of these people lined up, and it has been. And then we've had a few last-minute changes, and so now I have to deal with that as well. But we'll get there in the end. I have a high degree of confidence, but I hope. But it all begins at 8 p.m. Eastern Time in the Americas on Friday, June 25th, which is midday Saturday, June 26th here in New Zealand. It's also midnight, the 26th, Greenwich Mean Time / UTC, if that helps you locate the time, and continues for 48 hours afterwards. Now, I will, of course, I'll be hosting the kickoff show at 8 p.m. Eastern Time in the Americas on the 25th, and I'll be back 48 hours later for the wrap-up show. Now, immediately before the event, the Little Fatty Cast will be doing a special presentation. That's normally the time when they do their live shows. And so they're going to be doing live from the pink carpet and talking to people as they arrive for this festive event. And then at the conclusion of the event, after the wrap-up show, I am absolutely certain that there will be some sort of after show hosted by whom? I don't know. But it will probably go on for many hours after the event is actually over. And I'll be there for some of it, probably. I'm almost certain that I won't be there for all of it. But there you go. That's the plan. My own live show is a bit later than last year. It will be at 5:30 a.m. Eastern Time on Saturday, June 26th, which is 9:30 p.m. here in Auckland and 9:30 a.m. GMT / UTC. And the reason for that is that since I'm the host, I'm on the opening show and I'm on the closing show, I figured that I could be a little bit more flexible for the time for my own show. Plus, which we had some time we had to fill during the wee hours of the morning when nobody else wanted to do it, and quite frankly. So another podcast is extended to an hour and a half, and I've moved mine up half an hour and extended to 90 minutes as well. So I'll be going from 5:30 a.m. to 7 a.m. Eastern Time, which is, of course, 9:30 p.m. to 11 p.m. my time, all on Saturday. And I'm not entirely sure what I'm going to do for all that time, but the idea basically is to take the time when there's pretty much nobody else who wants to. It would have been nice to be a little bit earlier, but as I said, because I was already on the opening show and the closing show, I kind of felt I didn't really need to have the best possible time. Now, my friends in the Americas don't have to worry about staying up to listen to me, although I'm sure you are already planning on doing that, figuring out how you're going to set your alarms and so on. You don't need to, because I will record it and post it the following week. I don't know which day exactly. Probably on Monday. My time, well, probably not Monday my time, more like Tuesday, because the wrap-up show is actually Monday my time, and that's why I don't know if I'm going to have time to get to it. It's been a bit of a mission to get to this point, as I've talked about, mostly with the schedule. There's a lot of little things that I've had to deal with, things I wasn't quite expecting. We've had a few changes along the way, but all things considered, I think it's pretty well under control. I think that most of the folks, I have a number of the people I have a high degree of confidence in. I know that they're going to do great. Some of the others who I haven't yet heard from, I'm a bit worried that there might be a last-minute glitch. So we're going to have what I'm calling hall monitors, which are going to be people who are going to be able to step in and help in case something goes wrong, particularly in the middle of my night, because I'm not going to be on call for 48 hours, obviously. But because the time zones are so very different, somebody else in the Americas can be on hand when I'm asleep and vice versa. So with any luck, this will all work out. But I mean, there are always technical glitches, and so I fully expect that there will be technical glitches this year as well, just because I can't foresee them doesn't mean that they're not going to happen, obviously. We had some major glitches last year that we couldn't possibly have anticipated, I don't think. Although now that we're aware of them, at least we are unlikely to have those happening again. So I suppose it's kind of live and learn kind of thing, isn't it? But first, I wanted to update a story that I've talked about a couple of times now, and that is the credit card scandal around Chris Carter and what happened afterwards. Well, I told you how he was essentially harassed by the media in the halls of Parliament. He was chased around, and he was chased down some stairs, and there was a camera there in his face and all that. Well, the media has now been punished for having done that. And, of course, whether you consider it a punishment or not, I suppose, is a matter of opinion. The two main TV channels, TV1 and TV3, TV1 is owned by TVNZ, the New Zealand broadcaster, and TV3 is still owned by Ken West, a Canadian company, although they're still trying to sell it, as I understand it. Anyway, they chased Chris Carter around the halls of Parliament. They went into areas where they're not allowed to go, including going down a staircase that is off limits to the media. So the Speaker of the House has punished them by taking away their car parks. Now, they had each of the two channels had car parks underneath the Houses of Parliament. I think it's about 30 altogether, and they've been stripped of those. So they have to park with the ordinary people now if they can find a spot, and that will last for quite a while, basically until the Speaker is satisfied that they've learned their lesson, is what it amounts to. And that is because of what they did in chasing Chris Carter around. Now, actually, regardless of the specifics of the punishment, I don't know if that's a just punishment or not, but certainly punishing them in some way for what they did is justified, because it's not their role to try to exact an apology from a member of Parliament. And they have no right to go chasing them around Parliament just because they've decided they're on this crusade. You know, there are rules to the way things are done, and it wouldn't be acceptable for any other MP, so why would it be acceptable in this one case? So they deserve to be punished, and I'm glad that the Speaker did. Whether it was appropriate or not, I don't know. Others can judge that, although it will probably bother some of the journalists for a while anyway that they've lost their car parks. But, you know, good job. But related to Parliament and the Houses of Parliament again, there was an incident last week when the Vice President of China was visiting. He was going into the Houses of Parliament. Now, members of Parliament, MPs, have the right to go anywhere in the parliamentary precincts that they want to. They have free access. The only possible restriction would be the cabinet rooms and things like that. But in terms of the actual Parliament, Houses of Parliament, House of Parliament, whatever it is, they have unrestricted access. Well, one of the co-leaders of the Green Party was outside, and he was waving a Tibetan flag saying, "Free Tibet." Now, of course, this is like, there is probably no subject on which the Chinese are worse than they are about the subject of China. Falun Gong might be another one, but they have what seems to me is a hatred for Tibet, and certainly for anybody who criticizing them on their human rights record with Tibet. So what they did first, the president was traveling with some 20-odd Chinese security guards. They threw up umbrellas in front of this MP, Russell Norman is his name, so that they would block his view, or block the view of him from the Chinese president, the vice president, sorry. And then one of them ripped the flag out of his hands and threw it on the ground and started stomping on it. And somewhere along the way, the MP's hand was scratched as well. Now, there's a lot of things that are wrong with this situation. Whether or not the MP should have been protesting there at that venue against the vice president of China is an issue that people could have a reasonable discussion about. Personally, I don't have a problem with it. But whether it was classy or not is beside the point. He has a democratic right to do that. And as a member of Parliament, he had every right to be there and to also follow them into the Houses of Parliament. Apparently, the Chinese security were very unhappy with the fact that he was going in there, and he at one point looked like he was going to follow them the rest of the way to whatever this reception was. He didn't in the end. But what the Chinese don't seem to understand is that in Western democratic countries, the right of protest is sacred. And the Chinese don't get that. And this is not the first time this has happened. there was an incident when Labour was in government where a Chinese journalist was excluded on the orders of the Chinese because they believed he was associated, I believe this, they believe he was associated with Falun Gong, which is, they consider a cult and all kinds of other issues. And unfortunately, the security, the New Zealand security there didn't permit the Chinese journalist in. And I think they were wrong in that. But the worst one was when National was last in power and Jenny Shipley was prime minister. They had the APEC summit, or an APEC meeting. I don't think it was an APEC summit, actually. But anyway, I don't remember which Chinese official it was, but it was one of their big ones, was here. And they ordered buses to shield him and his entourage from the protests, mostly about Tibet, but not exclusively. And that's just wrong on so many levels. You know, if he is offended by democratic protests, then he really shouldn't travel to a democracy, because they have no right to expect any of us in a democracy to change our behaviors because it might bother them. If they don't like it, they shouldn't come here. We are a democracy, and we uphold democratic traditions, including the right of protest. And if the Chinese have a problem with that, that's too fucking bad. They shouldn't come here. It's as simple as that, as far as I can see. I can't see any arguments to the contrary. I can't see any rational reason why we should accommodate the Chinese sensibilities. So they get bothered about people protesting about Tibet. Too bad. You know, this is a democracy. People have a right to express their opinion. And that's something, of course, that can't happen in China. So maybe they don't like being reminded of what is not possible there. I don't know. But that was also on the grounds of Parliament just last week. But since then, of course, moving from the ridiculous to the sublime, actually it's probably moving from the ridiculous to the more ridiculous, there was a rugby test match in Dunedin this past weekend. Every year they have one test match in Dunedin. A test match is an international rugby game between the national sides of countries. In our case, obviously, it's the New Zealand All Blacks. And the Welsh team was there too. And I cannot remember for the life of me what the Welsh team is called. But anyway, it was against Wales. Well, somewhere along the way, Dunedin is also a university town. It's home to the University of Otago. And somewhere along the way, they developed a tradition of having a nude rugby match on the Saturday, in the daytime before the actual rugby test match. And it is people who represent New Zealand against people representing the other country, whoever that is. And so this year, the New Zealand side was called the Nude Blacks, and they were playing the Welsh Leeks. And there's actually video of it on TV3's website. If I remember, I'll put a link in the show notes so you can go watch it. Be warned, there is nudity involved. Some people are offended by that, apparently. For instance, there is a guy named Bob McCroskey, and he represents a far-right Christianist group called Family First. And I've talked about them before because they were the main drivers behind the vanity petition to try to promote smacking of children here in New Zealand. And the referendum I had so much contempt for. Well, he's a delicate little flower, is old Bobby. And he gets just so worried about so many things. Well, he filed an official complaint against TV3 because the night before, Friday night it must have been, the TV3's late night news, which is called Nightline, it shows at generally around 10:30 or so in the night. I don't know what time it was on that Friday. But it showed the men training for this rugby match, and they were naked. And this Bob McCroskey said that the images were full frontal and there was no attempt to pixelate them. And he said it's meant to be a news bulletin and not an R16 movie, and the network has crossed a dangerous line, and he accused them of hitting an all-time low in broadcasting standards. Oh, my, oh, my. Well, I mean, come on. A few willies flying around is not going to turn anybody into a debauched, depraved individual. If he doesn't want to see it, turn the channel. If he doesn't want to see that kind of thing, or he could use the off button. I mean, what right does he have to try to tell the rest of New Zealand how to live their lives? If he doesn't like it, he should deal with it. He shouldn't try to be telling everybody how to live their lives. Of course, when I read that he was filing a complaint, the first thing I wanted to know is, where can I file a complaint against Bob McCroskey? Because I'm sick of him doing this sort of stuff, which he does all the time. Remember when I was talking about the credit card scandal before, and that one of the MPs, Shane Jones, had charged porn to his credit card. Well, according to Bob McCroskey, the issue was not that he used the credit card for personal expenses, but the issue was that he used it for porn. Whoa! If you get the idea that I think he is a buffoon, you would be correct. I think he's a moron, an idiot, a self-righteous, pompous prick. And I really don't care what he says about anything. But the fact is that he's filed this official complaint, and the Broadcast Standards Authority is going to have to evaluate it and rule on all that costs taxpayers money, all because he is a prudish wowser and somebody who's really, frankly, not worth anybody's time. One of the reasons why I have such contempt for him and his organization is that they're opposed to the cervical cancer vaccine. And I have mentioned this before, but in case you've forgotten, it's not because of questions about its efficacy or its safety or anything rational, no credible rational reasons. It's because they say that giving the cervical cancer vaccine to girls will mean that it's saying it's okay to have premarital sex, which, by the way, it is, but putting that aside. And when I first read it, this is on their website, I can't tell you how appalled I was to read that, because what it says is that Bob McCroskey and his Christianist buddies would rather see their daughters die of cervical cancer than risk the possibility of possibly sending them the message that it's okay to have premarital sex. That kind of belief is so contemptible that this is why I started paying attention to his group Family First. And since then, they've done nothing but mischief ever since. It's all far-right Christianist bullshit. It is probably our leading far-right Christianist group. They don't have any membership to speak of. The people that they would claim to represent would be a tiny percentage of New Zealanders. But nevertheless, they talk louder than their size, as is so often the case. And this is just another example of the sort of stuff that they get up to. So those are a couple of things I wanted to update. But in differing news, in the past, the subject of digital television has come up, mostly as it relates to the U.S. And I think somebody actually asked me once when New Zealand was turning off its its analog signal, television signals. And the short answer is, who knows? They're looking to do it in 3 to 5 years. So somewhere around 2013 or 2015. There are actually quite a few things that need to be worked out first, and they're talking to possible partners and technology partners on how to make this move faster, and they say that some people are going to be left, you know, without television because there won't be any, digital capable televisions here fast enough. Well, I'm thinking, hello, there's a Freeview decoder you can get at any store that sells electronic stuff. I mean, it's not like people who have an old television are going to be forced to upgrade the television. I mean, sure, they won't get the full advantages of HD or digital, for that matter, but they'll be able to watch the programs. So I don't quite get what all of their weirdness is about. They say that the Freeview platform, which the signals are free, you just have to buy the decoder, it covers, they say, 75% of New Zealanders, and I don't quite get where they get that from, because the signal that's carried over UHF, the digital signal, reaches all the main centers, all the main cities. But the satellite signal, which uses a different decoder, but it uses the same one as the pay service Sky, so any house that's ever had Sky in it, Sky Digital, will be able to use for Freeview. That reaches 100% of the country. As far as I know, it's 100% of the country. If not, it's pretty damn close to it, like 98 or 99%. So they said they needed to have 100% coverage before they could shut it off, and I don't understand what it is they mean by 100% coverage, because if they mean through broadcast television, they're never going to get to that level through a terrestrial signal. So I don't know. It's really strange. I don't even think that the main channel, TV1, which is VHF, I don't even think that reaches the entire country, although I could be wrong about that. But anyway, that was just something else that came up in the news. But just today, there was something that I saw which really piqued my interest. It was about copyright, because you might remember that a while back we were looking at an amendment to the Copyright Act that would have penalized people for supposed illegal downloading. And theoretically, all you would have needed would have been to have been accused of illegal downloading, and you would have lost your internet connection. Now, there were arguments back and forth over whether or not that the drasticness of that punishment was actually true or not. But nevertheless, that argument is ultimately what killed it. Section 92A. Well, there's been a new study that's been released by Internet New Zealand, which shows that the industry's claim of grievous harm caused by illegal downloading is a crock of shit. What they found is that in 2009, New Zealand and Australia digital sales increased by 41.4%, and performance rights were up 8.6%. Which means that the industry had an overall increase in revenue of 3.5%. So they can't claim that they're losing all this money through illegal downloads, and therefore they have to have some sort of bizarre, hard-handed law, when in fact they're actually making money. And it's going to be interesting to see what ultimately comes of this. But I think that it could be probably the bit of evidence that rational people need to stop this. I think I've said before on this podcast that one of the main drivers behind the change in the copyright laws is the U.S., which is demanding that we change our copyright laws, and they're basically saying if we don't, then we can't have a free trade agreement with the U.S. Well, I say, there are some things the price is too high. I should talk about this in greater detail at some stage, but I'm not a big fan of free trade agreements anyway, especially with the U.S., because it tends to be that the U.S. gets everything at once and the partner gets nothing. That happened with Australia. It happens with most countries that sign a free trade agreement with the U.S. And I think that there is an argument to be made that countries should have the right to stand up for their own way of doing things. And if the U.S. doesn't like it, well, too bad. Go on your separate way. Because the thing I think is most illusory about all of this is that the government says that a free trade agreement is necessary to grow, and that if we don't do that, then we're going to end up with a real bad trade problem with the U.S. and all that. Except it forgets one little thing, that even with free trade agreements in place, the U.S. still has tariffs and it still has price supports, especially for agriculture. So nothing's going to change just because we have a free trade agreement, and I think it's quite shocking, really. And finally, from the news, there was another article that just came out today that migration into New Zealand shrunk to just 250 in May because a lot more New Zealanders were moving to Australia. Now, 250 permanent or long-term arrivals is an 18-month low. And I find this ironic because one of the things that the National Party campaigned on in the last election was about how all these people were leaving New Zealand for Australia, even though we had a net positive increase. And they wanted to close this gap and make it so that people would stay home and all that. And yet here we are now, and we're just about 18 months into their rule, and inward migration is at an 18-month low. So not only has the government not managed to improve the situation, it's actually arguably worse than it was when they came to power. Now, of course, the main reason for this is the economic crisis that hit the planet, and Australia got out of it much faster than New Zealand did. But the fact still remains that all of their highfalutin plans about what they're doing and why they're doing it were all for nothing. But now I'm going to go over to comments. And the first comment was from Roger Green, who said, "You said in your list of U.S. holidays not observed in New Zealand, no Veterans Day. But don't you have something else for November 11th, Remembrance Day? New Zealand did fight in World War I." Thank you, Roger. And no, we don't have anything on November 11th. And the reason for that is we have Anzac Day on April 25th, which is Memorial Day and Veterans Day and Armed Forces Day, all that all rolled into one. It commemorates the landing of the Australian and New Zealand forces at Gallipoli on April 25th, 1914, and it's been observed pretty much ever since. And so we have that. They do have Remembrance Day in the UK on the 11th of November. And it very often gets a mention here, partly because we have a lot of British expats here in New Zealand. And so they like to, you know, keep up with what's going on in the UK. And they usually cover wreath layings and things like that. But as a general rule, it's not really reported that much. It's certainly not a holiday in New Zealand. And I'm not even aware of the Returned and Services Association having any special events on the 11th, although they very well could for all I know. But it is not a holiday here in New Zealand. And next up was Montpensant, who said, "We had a similar conflict over whether or not Sikh Royal Canadian Mounted Police officers were allowed to wear their turbans while on duty. It's not part of the uniform, you see. It was eventually decided that they could. A question that occurs to me about the clubs is whether they also exclude observant Jews for wearing yarmulkes, skullcaps. Such rules can easily look like a way to exclude particular ethnic slash religious groups, without having to, perhaps, violate the law by stating the real goal explicitly. As for American cultural insularity, I have sometimes been shocked by many, obviously not all, Americans' complete ignorance of the fact that, in other countries, things are actually different. Maybe it's because so many of them grow up without ever leaving the U.S. And thank you, Montpensant. And by the way, somebody asked me recently if I'd heard from you because they missed your comments. So they obviously hadn't heard the last show that you commented on, obviously. But that same thing about the headwear, whatever, occurred to me as well, that it might just be a way of excluding people they didn't like. And it's entirely possible. There aren't that many Jewish people of any stripe in New Zealand. Last time I saw, the proportion of Jewish people in New Zealand was something like 2%, which is roughly the same as the number of Lutherans, oddly enough. It may have changed because that's going back a couple censuses now, and I haven't kept up to date with the religious affiliation. But the point is that we don't tend to have not as obviously, because that sounds like a racial thing. We tend not to see people wearing yarmulkes around. At least I don't. Not in Auckland, which is of course a big city by New Zealand terms, and certainly I haven't seen it anywhere else in the country. Which is not to say that they're not there, or that they don't wear them. It's just that I personally haven't seen it. So it probably isn't as big a deal as turbans are, as far as these clubs are concerned. But your question reminded me of when I lived in Chicago. There was a bar that was in a building that was where, Clark and Halsted cross, just south of Belmont. The building's now since been, it was torn down years ago after I left Chicago, but a long time ago now. And there used to be a bar in there, and they had a no hats policy. You're thinking, oh yeah, well, no hats, it's kind of odd, but the reason was, at the time, it was quite fashionable for young African-American men to wear baseball caps, and white men of the same age didn't. And this was a gay bar. I don't remember if I said that. And so what they were trying to do was keep African-American men out of this bar. And it was unsuccessful, ultimately, and the bar eventually closed. Actually, it closed rather quickly. So their policy wasn't a very good idea. But that's the first thing I thought of when you're asking that question about how in Chicago that sort of thing was definitely a way to keep people out of bars. It wasn't just gay bars, obviously. Other bars did the same thing. They would have dress standards in that were intended to target specific ethnic or racial groups. And I suppose that thing still goes on. It probably goes on here, too, in some ways. But it's not that New Zealand is post-racial or anything like that, but it is certainly a bit, overall, it's a bit more progressive than where I came from anyway. And as far as the insularity of Americans goes, well, I only cited one of the more glaring examples about the 4th of July. There are plenty of other instances that I've gotten. I think I mentioned in the very beginning that I knew a university-educated man who was convinced that New Zealand was west of Australia instead of the other way around. And I kept telling him, no, it's not. Oh, no. And so I had to finally show him a map of the world to show him where New Zealand was. This is when I was getting ready to move here. And I do think a lot of it has to do with the fact that Americans as a people don't travel very much. It used to be that only a tiny percentage had even had a passport. But, of course, nowadays, if they want to go to Arizona, they better have a passport. But the other thing, too, is that world history and geography is not taught in schools as much as it used to be. And so they're not just plain and simple, not as aware of other countries as they ought to be, in my opinion. And you could see that particularly at the time of the healthcare reform debate in Congress. There are all of these people who are pontificating about how disastrous the national health schemes in other countries were when they knew absolutely nothing about it. They were just repeating the same talking points of right-wing ideologues who were pushing a false premise and a false story in order to try to make their point. And because so many people knew nothing about France or Canada or New Zealand or any other country with a national health scheme, they bought right into it. They said, well, it must be true because this is what we think should be true. And if schools taught world history and world geography more, if the media covered world stories more and more thoroughly, and if Americans traveled more, well, first of all, the world would be a better place. But also, perhaps we wouldn't see these sorts of errors happening so frequently. We'll see. Well, it's been an exciting time here in New Zealand. The New Zealand All Whites, our national soccer team, they drew with Italy, 1-1. And before that, they had scored their first ever World Cup point. They hadn't been in the World Cup for 28 years. 1982 is the last time that New Zealand made it to the World Cup. And now they're second equal with Italy in their pool. Now, I couldn't care less about soccer, or football if you prefer. But I do find this all fascinating, that it's all getting all this extreme coverage. And, of course, people are pleased for the boys on the team and how well that they're doing. So, you know, that alone, I suppose, is worth celebrating and stuff. But that's it for today. Now, I do plan on being back once more today. There is a Too Political episode that has been posted. I posted it yesterday, day before. So that's available. And, of course, Pride 48 itself starts on Friday at 8 p.m. Eastern Time in the Americas, live on pride48.com. You can go there in advance to find out. You know, you can download files so you can download, so you can listen to it on your computer or on a mobile device or what have you. You can find out all the instructions for that. There's a chat room that goes with it. Love to see you there if you care to drop by and join us. And of course, my own live show will be on Saturday. Saturday morning at 5:30 Eastern Time in the Americas on Saturday, June 26th. And I don't think that there's going to be a live group show on Thursday, U.S. time of this week. That was the time that was taken by the podcaster formerly known as Archer. And the story's been well told by now, but for those who know who I'm talking about and don't know the story, what happened is he's an elementary school teacher. Somebody found his podcast site and other whatever, and informed his school. And even though there's obviously nothing illegal on the site, there's nothing inappropriate, in my opinion anyway, they mutually agreed it would be good to take it down. So he has taken down all of his sites, and the podcasts are no longer available through iTunes, and he's relaunching, at least for the time being, as Me and the Boyfriend. And I do have a link in my podcast links, my parade of podcasts, at both my site and also on my blog. So you're welcome to check that out. And he's posting more about what he's talking about, what he's doing. So, by all means, do check that out. And but what does bother me about this is that he didn't do anything wrong, but it's because somebody might make a deal out of it in a right-wing state like Virginia, he had to take it all down. And it's just wrong. It's just wrong. That sort of thing couldn't happen in New Zealand, I'm glad to say. And I feel really bad for him that it did happen to him. And I hope that before too long, the U.S. will change to a point where that is no longer possible. But that's it for today. And I will talk to you later this week. Bye. You can leave a comment on this or any other episode of the Amrens Podcast at amrenspodcast.com. You can send an email to me at Arthur, that's A-R-T-H-U-R, at amrenspodcast.com, or you can ring my U.S. comment line on 206-666-5172. This podcast is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.